E2, number 15B.
Christ at work, that Christ translates itself to the point of idea constantly. That's the absolute starting point. And what happened afterwards in those four chapters is the impact of the absolute sense on the human by retranslating what needs to be retranslated. So we could perhaps correct that and or define it much clearer, that we could say it is the translation of God to idea, the translation of God to idea. See, which would be the absolute sense, which would conform really to the first translation, which can never stand alone without the retranslation, the second translation. And that you see very nicely here, you see, that the moment we can see that God has an idea and translates itself to the point of idea, that we had in those four chapters a constant retranslation back to the idea. In the chapter on animal magnetism, it first showed that there is no other translation at work, that there is no evil translation at work. And then in the sixth chapter, retranslating the false nature of God into the true nature of God. Then in physiology, retranslating the mortal into the idea man. And then in the eighth chapter on footsteps of truth, retranslating an unscientific consciousness into a scientific consciousness. So that actually you have in those four chapters, you have from the absolute standpoint the first translation, and then four chapters showing what is being translated back to its original meaning, the retranslation. Then, if that is so, then we have a common index for the eye, namely the calculus in an absolute sense. You can, as a subscripted term, perhaps a small a, the calculus in the absolute sense. Now you have really a common characteristic. You see that what Mrs. Eddy wants to present is that she first wants to reveal God in God's nature, then showing that God translates itself in the Christ to the point of idea. Then in Christianity you take it up at the point of idea and show it as the realm of idea. And then in the science chapters, taking that idea right back to its principle and see that idea has never left its principle, but is always one with its principle. Principle and idea being one. Which brings us now to a more difficult question, namely, we still don't have yet a matrix. And we would only have a matrix and would only see that actually the textbook is written in a matrix form if actually the horizontals could be defined and if they would have a consistency in it. So we had felt somehow in our bones that the index J has always a relative connotation. But we would have to define that. And so we would have to ask, do those chapters which are on the word horizontal, that is prayer, animal magnetism, creation and teaching, do they have a common denominator? And it was quite interesting in the other seminars I had where people could, students could give their contribution, that they were very good at it. Which is not easy. They somehow were laboring quite rightly and in finding the right term. They would say, well, here she starts with the basis of it. So they said it is the declaration of it. And then finally we felt, let's call it the proposition, that these chapters always first give the proposition to the I index. so that you start somehow out with a proposition and say, yes. You see, for instance, in the chapter on prayer, now you would have to have a working knowledge of this chapter and say, yes, it is so. Your proposition is that actually through prayer God does reveal itself. Yes, actually it is so, the proposition is so, that there is only one translation from God to idea and there is no other translation, animal magnetism. And that the actual creation, the proposition of the realm of idea is that being or the universe consists of ideas, that ideas build up the universe of ideas. And in teaching it actually is so, the proposition is that you can be one with the principle. You have a chance to be one with its principle by abiding by the principle. So the unity of principle and idea is there stated, so to say, as a basic proposition which is workable. So we felt as a working hypothesis that the word is stating first the proposition from which you go out. But without any such proposition, you really cannot go any further in your understanding. Then we came to the Christ horizontal, feeling our way. What is the common characteristic going through that Christ horizontal? And each one somehow began to feel, and they were quite good at it also, they had a sense, well, here is always shown that a power is being expressed, is working. And that's why we could see why we couldn't have up here in the Christ, in the I index, the Christ power at work, because they would feel very much so on the Christ horizontal that it shows the Christ power at work, namely as manifesting itself in the human. So we called it manifestation, but with thinking that it is a manifestation to the human. So we called it manifestation, that's what the Christ does. And can you see when you go through it how you feel that manifestation? In a dominant Eucharist you have the manifestation of the nature of God and says, here comes the demand of the Christ. That Christ doesn't stop until you fulfill those demands. It has that impelling, manifesting power that comes to the human and says, I don't give you peace until you turn to God. Huh? Just as the prophets would have said, and they would have said, there is no hope for you until you return to the God. So it gives a sense of manifestation that says the divine must overcome the human at every point. In the chapter on science, theology, and medicine, it shows that Christ power at work as manifestation. You have the Christ as the Christ in its fullest sense there. Namely, manifesting really God's power to retranslate the wrong concept of God into a right concept of God. And when you come to science of being, again you have the manifesting power, namely the dynamics of idea, where it says an idea just doesn't sit still. It is dynamic. It manifests itself. It has a Christ and manifests itself. And in the chapter on recapitulation, which brings it up to a principle, it says the principle isn't just a principle. It manifests itself always as the Christ of that principle, as a system. And then we came to the next horizontal, Christianity. And when you look through that Christianity, you see at once somehow that there always something is brought forth as the outcome which says, at that point you are better than you were before. At that point you are exalted above the preceding status of things. You get the sense of Christianity being supreme, exalted, a sense of supremacy, let's call it exaltation. If you go through it quickly and you still remember what we have in those chapters, you see at once that the chapter on marriage said that if we fulfill the demands of the Christ, we have a better humanhood, an improved humanhood, exalted sense. In chapter 7, physiology, what did you get there? The first part just showed that the mortal is just blown up, and that what's left is that we awake to a higher sense of what constitutes man, an exalted sense about man. And in some objections answered, you got that wonderful sense of exaltation which says, if you really see the coherency of the idea, then you are not just a drop, you are an ocean. You are not just a ray of light, you are the sun. You are not just the sun, but you are one with the Father. You are not an isolated idea, you are exalted into being. Gives you a sense there that you are not just at the point of reflection, but that reflection demonstrates itself and therefore exalts you. It gives you a sense of demonstration. At the point of Genesis, in the last one, you see that over and over again, that it gives you a higher sense, which shows, I lift you out of the second record of creation. I lift you even out of the third part of that Genesis, namely of the theory of evolution. And I lift you right out and exalt you that you see that you are just the eternal Genesis of that one divine principle at work. Gives you a higher sense all through. And if you go to science, then you see it very easily here. Every one of those boxes had always to do with scientific understanding. So we can write in here scientific understanding. And if you go horizontally through it, you see what scientific understanding does. At the point of the word of the revelation of God, that scientific understanding reveals you exactly what is real and what is unreal. That's the fourth chapter. When you come to footsteps of truth, you see that it gives you a new scientific understanding of consciousness, in consciousness, a scientific consciousness. And in practice it shows that with that scientific understanding of ideas, you heal. And in Apocalypse it says, and with that scientific understanding you can see that there is nothing going on but the operation of principle and idea, that there is never anything going on, but you must understand it, or else you can't see it. So, what could we say in this case, that the index is the calculus, but in a relative sense, in a relative sense, because a proposition is always that which we make. God doesn't make a proposition. God reveals himself. The Christ is manifestation in the flesh, which is naturally very relative, showing that it manifests itself in spite of the opposite. So it's relative. Exaltation is relative, because in the absolute we do not have any exaltation. In the absolute you can't exalt yourself. One can only exalt oneself above the human. So again it's relative, and scientific understanding also is relative, because it is our understanding and not God's understanding of himself. It's not God's consciousness of himself that is shown here. And so all these chapters there show you that instead of having a wrong understanding, an understanding built on beliefs or on sense testimony is no good, that you must humanly have a scientific understanding. And that with your scientific understanding, you can separate what is real and what is not real. So that in evaluating these fours, you really can see that it has a relative connotation. then you can ask yourself, now what on earth is that textbook all about? Has it to do with mind? And you feel, oh no, that's impossible, because it's not about the synonymous term here. It's a much bigger sense. So you ask yourself, has it to do with the word? And you could say, well, with the word, actually she shows more than the word, because she brings it always home that everything must be scientific, that you must have a scientific prayer instead of a theological prayer, that atonement and Eucharist is not the theological happening at the Last Supper in drinking wine and eating bread, but that is a scientific process. And so I guess one feels very much in one's bone that the whole thing depicts really Christian Science as a science, which presents itself, therefore, that it's presenting Christian Science. It's the textbook, the Christian Science textbook, showing Christian Science mainly from the point of view of the absolute sense and its impact on the human. That is the great mission of the textbook, that it says here, Mrs. Eddy presents a science that is Christian, actually not divine, because the main body of her text is always concerned with the Christian aspect of it, and shows the calculus from an absolute point of view, and its impact on the calculus in the relative, so that it is a very practical science that is depicted here. So I just wanted to show you the method of how to arrive at a matrix. Therefore, can you see that if such a matrix would have been presented to the reader in its fullness and just stated that actually the reader has not the faintest idea how he can evaluate if that matrix is right or wrong, if the presentation is right or wrong. And he would not know how on earth one has arrived at such a matrix. And the knowing of how to arrive at something is usually much more informative than just to have the result presented on the silver plate. Because when you know how to arrive at it, you can understand it. If we do not know how we arrived at the conclusion, we do not know if that conclusion is right or wrong. And this is something that must be cultured. See, I think very few students do that with the literature that is brought out. For instance, say, right from the start, when Mr. Dawley brought out his verbatim reports on the Bible and was showing the layout of the Bible, translating really biblical symbolism into metaphysical ideas, and then going further a step and showing that those metaphysical ideas have, according to the system of reference, a layout, and presented his findings at the talks, and then they were printed and the reader got it, and the reader just had time to read it before the next booklet arrived, because we got every week, we got 30 pages to read and to absorb. The reader was just reading it, and this was a great, great mistake. They did not ask, why did Mr. Dawley come to that conclusion? They felt this is not nice to Mr. Dawley to doubt his results, to doubt his findings, because that's religious thinking, to think that way, that we should not question something that is presented in a biblical or religious way. The scientist feels he honors a writer and an author if he queries his findings, if he questions his findings, if he tries and say, I would like to know how on earth he could arrive at these results. And would I also arrive at these results? If a reader does that, then he honors the author. If he says this book is wonderful and is inspirational, he does not honor the author, because he does not know how the author has arrived at his conclusion, and therefore does not know if it's true or wrong. You see? Therefore, this is a scientific way, and it's actually the only way we should approach. And it has a terrific advantage. I think because I question Mr. Dawley constantly on his findings, not to disprove him, but to know why he states it, and why didn't he state it otherwise. I went in my understanding through the whole process of his thinking constantly. And that cultured my thinking, and I always could find out finally, yes, he was right. But that's the culture behind it that is so valuable for such a work.